What's up, guys? Strength Talk and Shop podcast. We are presented by our sponsor, Optimum Nutrition Athletics. Thank you for Optimum Nutrition Athletics for sponsoring today's episode. And after dominating the sports and nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. If this is something that you're interested in getting in your facility, make sure you reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics. His contact information is down in the show notes. Thank you for being our sponsor. All right, guys, big guest today. It is the head strength and conditioning coach of the Fan Control Football League and the host of the Unknown Strength Coach podcast, Coach Kerry Thompson. How are you this morning, sir?
I'm doing good, Matt, man. It's funny that you mentioned Dave. I met Dave at my second NSCA conference and built a great relationship with him, man. And at my past couple of schools, we've been able to order protein from Optimum Nutrition, man. I absolutely love Optimum Nutrition, man. So it's good. Shout out to Dave, man. It's good to see you still out here building networks, man.
Absolutely. Dave is awesome. Again, get it out in your facility, guys. Coach Thompson here, he knows how great it is. I know how it is when I was coaching. It's awesome. Again, I'm very excited to have Coach Thompson on the podcast. We talked, obviously, beforehand, the podcast, like I do with every guest. And I was mentioning, man, I just wish I could get a beard just as good as Coach Thompson does and everything like that. But he's a great resource for all these coaches. So, Coach Thompson, again, thank you for being on this podcast, but I always want to start off with the story. You know, what got you into the madness that is strength and conditioning?
So, great. It's a kind of funny story. 2007, I get kicked out of my respiratory therapy program. They accused me of not going to clinicals. Funny thing is that I had three jobs as a student because of the job I did with clinicals. And had three job offers lined up, you know, when I graduated. But, you know, tomatoes, tomatoes, everything happens for a reason. I was coaching peewee football. My son was in the third grade at the time. Absolutely loved coaching kids and being around them and watching them grow. And so I thought, you know, hey, maybe I can do it on the high school level. You know, I have a pretty good understanding of football. And so went back to figure out what I would have to do to get, you know, my degree in secondary education. They were like, yeah, you're going to have to do two more years of school. I go, no, that's not happening. All right. I had 128 credits. No way I'm going back to school. Right. No. So I end up writing a letter and getting an individually designed major, which ended up being health studies because, you know, all my courses were in health, of course. So, excuse me, from there, got my degree, but I was still in sales. So I had a kid at the age of 16 years old. He's now 23. He'll be 24 this year. And probably the greatest thing I've done is be a father. And it's always been the motivating factor of everything I've done. So I was in sales, but my heart was in coaching. I was still coaching Pee Wee football and doing a great job in sales. But the thing about sales is that it's not about, you know, what you've done. It's about what have you done lately. So I'm finishing the month at 200% consistently. And then I have a couple of months where I finish at 150, 125, 135. And they're like, well, your performance is dropping. I'm sitting here like, you know, I'm still 35%, 50% over goal, you know, but I'm not selling what I used to sell. So I started volunteering at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, thanks to John Cook and Zach Woodfin in 2014. Probably one of the best staffs I've been around. Zach's a great forward thinker. Yeah. And he's now with the USFL, which is, you know, pretty dope. He's the head guy there. And so, you know, him and John, Coach Finley he was the head guy at Southern Miss. He was Zach's assistant. At UAB, he was at Washington State, and now he's, you know, in the high school sector, and he loves it. And just a lot of great, smart minds that were on that staff, forward thinkers, and we ended up taking UAB, being a part of that growth, from being like a 2-9, 2-10 team to going 6-6 and becoming bowl eligible.
Yep.
They canceled our football program, which is, you know, well-known. They canceled the football program. And so, you know, I had to get back into sales. So I was working with Samsung, and then ended up getting a job in construction sales after I, you know, got let go from Samsung due to them downsizing. So fast forward in construction sales, I've been putting off taking the CSCS for about 2 or 3 years. I've been personal training a little bit on the side, make a little extra money. And I just, you know, one day, you know, I had a conversation with my old lady and told her, hey, like, I'm not happy. You know, like, I don't like going to work every day. And so she was like, hey, if that's what you want to do, I support you. I turned in my letter of resignation that day and became, you know, personal trainer, jumped in full-time studying for my CSCS in 16. Ended up going back to UAB when they bought the program back. And, you know, it's been a ride ever since. So strength and conditioning does not feel like work. And that's when I knew I was doing the right thing.
Yep.
I absolutely enjoy going in every day. You just never know what you're going to get with college kids one day to the next. And so, like, the impact of I'm having on young people's lives is always going to be the greatest motivating factor. Like, a lot of young kids that I've coached in peewee football and now in college or graduating from high school with, you know, collegiate offers. And, like, you know, it's really great to get messages from parents that say, hey, you know, you played a major role in my son's football development. And, you know, a lot of those guys still call me Coach K or Coach Kerry or Coach T. They call me and say, you know, thank you. And it's always the greatest thing to get from the athletes.
I love that. There's a lot that you could dive into, obviously, what you just talked about. One of the biggest things, two big things is, one, you had a great partner and your wife being able to support you in something like that. I think that in this industry, if you do have a significant other, is absolutely massive. You got to have that backing and somebody that's going to help push you forward, man. I mean, that's huge. But number two, and this is, I hope coaches realize this, you took ownership over your career, right?
Right.
You knew what you wanted to get at in your path. And you said, all right, it's time to jump in and do the work. And I love that you jumped in and just kind of did the work and look at how it's paid off now. I mean, you know, the head strength and conditioning at the Fan Control Football League, you've worked at some very big universities. You've helped so many athletes, but think about where it all started. Peewee football, right?
Peewee football, man. And it's crazy. It's strength and conditioning started with me making snack bags and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches throughout the summer, not getting paid, but, you know, still making a way. Like, a lot of guys don't understand, like, that adversity thing, man. Like, it's going to hit you in the mouth at some point. Yep. You got to be able to take that punch. And, you know, you think, man, like, just being brutally honest with you, like, I volunteered 4 years at two universities before I got my first full-time job. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys think that, you know, oh, I passed the CSCS, got my master's, I deserve a $100,000 a year job. And that's just not how that works in this field at all. So, you know, you gotta, you know, bruise your knuckles up. And I would like for our generation of strength and conditioning to try to do better at fighting for getting these guys some kind of money.
Yeah.
Or some kind of, like, help them out a little bit. You know, I would love to be able to make a salary to where I could look at my interns and say, hey, I'm going to give you guys $500 a month. I know it's not a lot, but it's a hell of a lot more than I made volunteering.
Yeah.
Just to start to try to change the trajectory of the field, because if I'm making $300,000-$400,000 a year, $500 a month over two or three kids can change their life, and that's not going to affect mine. So, yeah. You know, you think about that, man. Some people waste $1,500 a month in food and Starbucks, you know? So if I can sacrifice that little thing, which is not really a sacrifice at all, eating out and drinking Starbucks, you know, or whatever your vice is, you know, and change somebody's life in the process, why not do it, you know?
Well, and look at the investment side of it, you know, from, like, if you were to give somebody $500 to change their life and they stay in the field, that $500 could be something that keeps them in coaching or they leave the profession. We all know those people, myself included. I left the profession because it wasn't paying the bills, kind of thing. And I had a wife at the time. Right?
Right.
So you have to, But as a coach, you have to understand, like, you have to take care of your staff. That's like the biggest thing right there. And I think if coaches can listen to what you're talking about and understand where can we help push this next generation, because that next great coach, he might be out there, but he can't afford to do the four internships and stuff like that.
And then, you know, even if it's just like I said, man, it's $500 or even like $1,000. Like, let's do the math, man. Like, just, you know, simple math. If I'm making $360,000 a year, like, I'm making about $30,000 a month, right?
Insane.
Insane. So you mean to tell me out of $30,000, get $3,000 or $4,000 is gonna make or break your family? It's just not gonna do it. No. So, like, hey, I got four interns. I'm gonna pay each of them a month. And hey, I'm like, I would advise you to pay your taxes on this $1,000 a month so you don't get hit across the head. But that $12,000 a year can be enough to, you know, moonlight somebody that's coming in at 5 a.m., setting up your weight room, cleaning your weight room, coaching your athletes. It's like you said, man, it's no different than the athletes. Like, if I know that my head guy is going to do whatever it takes to make sure I'm successful, like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep him successful. And, like, that's just the mindset you just got to have about it.
I completely agree. And like you said, you're pushing the staff forward. And at the end of the day, who are you helping? You're helping the athletes out, right? And you're killing two birds with one stone and right there, in my opinion. And you're helping change lives, like we said, because you talked about it. You talked about all the athletes that you had with Pee Wee football growing up, that their, you know, their parents reached out to you and said, hey, you helped shape my kid's life. And that coach might not stay in the collegiate side. He might go to the high school sector. He might go to the private sector. But that coach could have one impact on an athlete that changes the trajectory of their life, right? So maybe they're the first kid in their family to ever go to college. Boy, could you imagine how crazy that would be? You know, right. It's insane.
Absolutely, man.
What was some of the biggest lessons you learned from Zach? So I'm, you know, like I said, I live in Kansas City, so I'm a big Mizzou football fan. Sad to see that he left, obviously. But, you know, what were some things that you learned from Zach, if you don't mind me asking?
Man, Zach's as great of a coach as he is, he's a better human being.
Yeah.
And I can call him and ask him for advice. I can call him and talk to him about any struggles I'm having. I mean, he's always going to have a positive word. He's going to always try to go the extra mile to help, which is like a great feeling for me because I was an intern on his staff. But, you know, some coaches don't even know who their interns are. Yeah. But he took the time to get to know who I was. So that meant a lot to me. Zach, when he got to UAB, there were about 30 to 40 guys that were, you know, had really serious injuries or, you know, like very, you know, debilitating stuff, a lot of joint, shoulders, ankle, things of that nature. And man, that 2014 season, we went from, you know, a ton of musculoskeletal things to no musculoskeletal injuries. And I'm like, dude, this works. So, like, I literally, you know, I talked about copying and pasting earlier. The stuff that worked from Zach, which is pretty much everything, is still in my exercise library.
Yeah.
So if I want to pull something or, you know, that's pretty much the bare bones foundation of my program. And then from there, I have my philosophies and my beliefs that I've pulled, you know, and put into that program. And, you know, you always have to, if you go put something in, you got to take something out, or y'all go be in the weight room for 2 hours.
So glad you said that.
So you can't just leave, you can't put everything in. You're going to have to hit the major things, but then also just understanding, like, what I learned from Zach is that you can get stronger in season. You can train mobility and flexibility and still have explosive athletes. And aiding, like, recovery is king.
Mm-hmm.
And those three lessons that I learned from him has been, like, extremely instrumental in, like, me, the places I've been, like at Grambling State, at Allen University, I've been a head guy at. Like, injuries were minimal. At Allen University, we were playing, like, we were practicing on a makeshift field. So it wasn't necessarily the greatest practice field, kind of had some divots in it. And I'm extremely thankful that we didn't have any ACLs or anything like that, praise God. But like the only injuries we had in a 2-year span was a broken leg that someone fell down, crashed into his leg. And we had a partial ACL tear where the kid went to make a tackle and his leg whipped. I mean, it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. But those were the only two injuries that we had in 2 years. Now, this is a brand new football program, and a brand new football program with kids that, you know, a lot of kids did not have very high training ages. And most of them, all of them were freshmen and sophomores.
Wow.
So, you know, we didn't have injuries like that there. When I got to Grambling, a lot of shoulder injuries, a lot of ACLs, a lot of hamstrings and things like that. We played two football seasons in one year, calendar year, like last year in 2021, we played in the spring and in the fall.
That's right.
Injury, like no shoulder, no labrums, no none of those. And we had two ACLs. One was because the kid spat at his shoe and landed and his ankle wouldn't move. So therefore, all of that went directly up to his knee. And I hate that. It's one of our better players. And we had a contact ACL where the kid went to make a move. He stabbed and went to plant.
Yeah.
And I came from the side and hit his knee and it buckled. So I, you know, I'll take the, you know, a partially torn ACL and two ACL injuries in 4 years is saying that, you know, hey, and they're like no non-contact stuff, you know, like no very, very minimal hamstring stuff. You know, you can, hamstrings are kind of finicky because it could be running mechanics, it could be hydration, it could be, you know, it could be anything, but more than likely, especially early off in camp when you get a lot of guys that are complaining about hamstrings, between me and you, you know it. They were at home playing Madden or 2K, and they were not training. So when they get those high speed loads again, running, you know, of course you're going to have some hamstring tenderness until your body gets back used to training. But we didn't have guys missing games due to hamstrings and stuff like that. So the greatest things I learned from Zach is a strong, mobile body can, you know, reduce your injury rate. The best of ability is availability, and you can definitely get stronger and more explosive in season.
Can you talk to me a little bit more about that exposure to the hamstring? Because I think that's a very important point that a lot of coaches don't understand, especially when, like, let's say you're coming off of a winter break and you're starting spring ball up and everything like that. It's like being able to build that hamstring up so it is resilient, you know, maybe working on that deceleration training and everything like that. Can you kind of dive a little bit deeper into that? Because I think that's a very missing key in a lot of people's programs.
Absolutely. So I'm 100% into acceleration, deceleration training, and it totally depends on hamstring strength. Yeah. I program heavy RDLs, single leg RDLs, dumbbell RDLs, kickstand RDLs, like glute hams, Nordics, like they are going to be a mainstay in my program, and the volume is going to be intense in the first, you know, couple of weeks, GPP block to kind of get those hamstrings strong. When we train a lot of landing mechanics, especially during that, in that GPP phase, you had to absorb force, because as me and my assistant Matt McKay talk about all the time, like you can't distribute force if you can't absorb it. So hamstring, your hamstring, and when you're slowing down and decelerating, your hamstring's contracting. Mm-hmm. And it has to be strong enough to handle those loads and have the strength to be able to maintain it through the full range of motion. So you can't short stroke the movement. It's got to be all the way down, controlling it down and coming back up. You know, Bumper and Buzzatelli, I still read that book, man, The Periodization Training of Sports, that third edition. Like I've read that book at least 3 or 4 times and I learned something new each time I read it. And it's truly understanding tempo training. And in your GPP block, you know, those 3 seconds down, 4 seconds down, 5 seconds down, tempo wise, you know, that stuff does prepare the body, the tendons and ligaments for the loads to come, as well as, you know, teaching guys how to, and teaching body positions, right? So yeah, acceleration, deceleration can be simple, man. It can start off at, I'll have guys, you know, sprint for 10 yards and by the 15-yard line, you know, come to a stop in the athletic position. And then I just progress it up from there, kind of simply like plyometrics, right? You start double leg and then you progress it to single leg. And then you start to add more volume and make the exercise a little more intense. So if I got a guy running 5 yards, you know, I'll make, give him 2 yards to stop. Hey, I need you to come to a complete stop at acceleration within 2 yards. So it's a total like 7 yards, right? And I'll have them do that, or I'll have them sprint forward. And it's kind of like a mental thing as well. Yeah. To say, hey, I want you to explode forward 10 yards. But I want you, by the time you get to the 10-yard line, I want you to stop on your right leg or stop on your left leg. I like to do shuffle, change of direction, and same way teaching those things, because change of direction is simply being able to decelerate and reaccelerate at a high rate, right? Body position is important. I have them shuffle to the right and then come to a stop in a good body position, and then teach them how to explode, turn, and run, but have the right body angles, right shin angles. That stuff matters. So hamstring strengthening is posterior chain work, is 100% the backbone of our program. We're going to hammer your posterior chain in our program. We're going to do at least 3 to 4 hamstring exercises on a lower body day, because I like to do a lower body split, upper lower split. Yeah. With a yoga recovery day on Wednesdays in between to kind of help guys shake back a little bit, because the training is intense. So, you know, we follow a linear periodization model. We keep it, you know, really simple. And, you know, we try not to make things complicated or reinvent the wheel. I mean, it's like, you got to understand acceleration, deceleration training. And, you know, it's a major part. And it's great to see a lot of coaches are now starting to implement that right into their plans. Like Joey G down at
oh yeah,
Florida Atlantic, man. He has been absolutely killing it, man. And like, I love to watch some of the stuff he's doing, as well as Benny Wiley, as well as, like, a lot of people don't know, man, but Lonnie Maddox at Valdosta is probably another one of those guys, like we talked about with Keith Swift, that are doing some amazing things strength and conditioning wise. They don't get that, you know, oh, this guy's amazing pub, because, you know, they're at a smaller school. But, you know, Lonnie and I have been, you know, we talk all the time about acceleration, deceleration training. And he was doing that, you know, at Alcorn in 18, 19, before the pandemic. They won 2 SWAC championships. Again, one of the least injured teams in the conference, because, you know, you're preparing the body, hamstring strengthening wise, for the loads of changing direction and doing it at extremely high level, which is all football is. So, I mean, and then you think about the benefits of a strong hamstring for your ACL, right? Stronger hamstring, the less likely, like when people tear their ACL, it's just simply because their knee shifts forward over their tib and fib, right? And it pops. Like, and so when your hamstring's strong enough, your knee does not slide forward in order for the ACL to do that. Same way with, you know, it aids in stability of your knee. So you don't have that valgus, that dynamic valgus that, you know, causes that ACL tear. So it's extremely important, man. Like, I just don't think enough coaches spend time. Like they say it's like the, you know, that fancy training, blah, blah, blah. But bro, change of direction and acceleration, deceleration is all the game of football is. Like, I maybe spend a drill or two on high top end mechanics and, you know, speed mechanics. I try to spend maybe 60, 70% of my time, when I have that time, on plyometric development, acceleration, deceleration, and definitely on acceleration training. Because, you know, if you're not able to accelerate at a high rate in the game of football, you're cooked.
Yep.
So you got to be able to do that. Receivers got to be able to get in and out of breaks. Linebackers and safeties have to run down plays. Corners have to have recovery speed. Defensive ends have to get off a block and accelerate to a quarterback. Our defensive linemen, offensive linemen have to be able to accelerate up to a linebacker or, you know, a shifty safety in order for a running back to be able to accelerate through the hole. Like every one of those positions use acceleration exclusively to be effective. So why not train that, you know? Like, why are you spending half of your training time working top-end mechanics when in actuality you very, very rarely in the football field reach top-end mechanics?
Well, and my thought too with the top-end mechanics too as well is like, let's think of a punt return. You're not running in a straight line. You're getting blocked. You're getting moved all around. So you're not really going to reach those top-end mechanics at all. And it's a chaotic environment. I remember who I talked about that, but it's exactly what you said. It's like the body awareness, the body positioning, like getting them in those chaotic environments helps prepare the body. So when it comes to the field, they've been in those spots before. That's why I think it's kind of a hidden gem of that deceleration, acceleration work. You're putting them in the positions that they're going to see themselves on the field. It'd be no different if you were a basketball player and you never jumped, kind of thing, right? It's like you're going to jump if you're a basketball player.
You're going to, and you're going to land. I mean, you got to land, right? So like that absorption of force is extremely important, man, not to put that absorption in your knees. Having in your hips, there's a lot more meat back there.
Exactly.
In order to help you be able to absorb those forces. And something else that we do as well, I have access to a football field, I love the circle runs. Like, I love to work those as well because of, you know, again, it's an acceleration, but also think about, you know, what that does for ankle stability. Stiffness, helping guys be able to lean more. You know, you can add a towel down there to help them run and lean down. And like, it's just so many different ways that are merging drills together. You can have them run that half circle and then work them into a deceleration pattern. And it's just so many different ways to do it, which, you know, really helps me understand or helps me not understand, like, why are guys arguing over how to do things instead of just appreciating. I spend at least an hour a day, man, looking at stuff people put out. If I don't agree with it, guess what I do? I slide my finger up and go to the next one.
Exactly.
I don't have to comment some rude or disgusting under somebody's, oh, this is dumb. Like, no. Or if I don't understand it, I'm going to ask questions.
Yep.
Like, my ego's not that dude. Like, I'm working on my PhD right now and at Liberty. And the biggest thing I've been able to see is that, oh man, like that chart that says what I know versus what I don't know is astronomical, man. Like, you will never know everything in this field. You can believe in what you believe in. And as long as you can defend it, no one can tell you, oh, that's not going to work. Like, people can't tell me that acceleration, deceleration training, strengthening the hamstring and the glutes, spending time on landing mechanics, progressing plyometrics, it doesn't work. Like, you can't tell me that because I've used it in every program I've been in and it's worked.
Exactly.
Our risk of injury exponentially. So if you haven't been in my program or been with me every day, how can you tell me what works? Just like I can't tell you what may work for your athletes, because we don't have the same caliber athletes. I'm sorry. I love my guys from Allen. You know, I love you guys, but you guys are not at a performing task at the same level as Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, DeAndre Hopkins. Like, you're not at that level. So the training for those guys, it's going to look completely different than a trainer for you, because you need to be more effective at body position and change of direction. This guy may have some, like, you know, once you've been training for so long, it's going to plateau out anyway. Yep. It's going to be really hard to get further, you know, once you reach that genetic ceiling. Yep. It's a lot tougher to be able to stimulate growth and increase performance. So you have to, add additional stimuli to aid that athlete that's something they may not have ever done before. Like, so that's why it's hard to say, oh man, like I don't believe in the back squat. No, I believe the back squat works just like I believe the Zercher works, just like I believe front squat works. Some guys can't put their load on their back, or some guys have never experienced having to brace and use a Zercher. So it may stimulate something a little bit different in those guys because they've never done it before.
Yep.
So now I'm bracing a lot more and more aware of my core, and it may aid me in my barbell back squat later. So it's just so many different ways to cook chicken, right? You can fry it, you can bake it, you can grill it, you can pan sear it, you can put it on a stick and turn it around, you can rotisserie it. But guess what? It's still good chicken. It's cooked. And hell, I'm from the South. I love fried chicken. I love rotisserie chicken. But people up north might like baked chicken. Yeah. And does that mean that their chicken is any less good than my chicken? No, it doesn't. So it's all in, you know, what you've been exposed to, what you want to be exposed to, and just growing from there.
It's all about growing your toolbox, right? So we all have a different set of toolboxes. You have different strengths than I do. And what can I take from your toolbox and how can I best apply it to my athletes, right? If it's doing, sometimes we got to drop the ego and be like, all right, I love the back squat, but you know, maybe my athletes need some front squats and Zercher squats, or maybe they need a goblet squat, or maybe they just need to do a bodyweight squat. What can we do to create the stimulus that I'm looking for the end result of the athlete at the end of the day?
And that's, you know, I love, like, it's funny you say the goblet squat, man. It's probably one of my favorite exercises just because of it reinforces a deep squat position. It makes them understand, like, man, one of my greatest stories, man, is at Grambling, man. My women's basketball team at Grambling, they were some dogs. Do you understand? Yeah. Like, each one of those girls was squatting over 300 pounds, and none of them weighed over 190 pounds, right?
Wow.
So these girls, I had three girls on the team squatting 405, man. I'm talking about dogs, right? And these girls come in, and I challenge them one day. One of them goes over and grabs 60 pounds. You know, a lot of coaches, especially, and I hate this, but some, you know, strength coaches, they baby their women athletes, right?
Yep.
And they're like, oh, you know, that's good. No, that's not good enough. All right. So if you're going over there, cruise control, doing 60s, why don't you have the 90 pound goblet squat, right? Because it's just that you just went pop, 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 pop. You're a 400 pound squatter, man. There's no reason that you should be over here with 60s. Man, by the time preseason ended, I had girls doing 130s on the goblets, and they were just like for sets of five, just boom, boom, boom. And they're passing it to their teammates. And when one of their teammates is not picking up as much, those girls are like, hey, you get your ass over there, you get something. And it's a great, and it's just a great feeling, right? But like I said, the goblet squat, I love heavy barbell split squats. I absolutely love them, right? And we used them this summer at Grambling, and guys put 70, 90 pounds on their squat because we were heavy split squatting for triples or for fours. And then as, you know, we progressed them up for singles and doubles, like we had guys that by the end of the summer were using their old max on their split squats for doubles and triples. So I 100% believe in them, but once I program those, I have to have a bilateral squat towards the end of the workout. So I'll usually program goblets and just 100% reinforce getting into that deep bottom position and then exploding up, because it reminds those athletes like, hey, this is what a squat feels like at full depth.
Yeah.
This is what I need to be striving for when I'm, you know, doing my barbell back squat. So the goblet squat is one of those things, like I said, it's going to be 100% in my program. Goblet split squats, goblet bilateral squats, like that type of stuff, I 100% believe in.
I completely agree as far as the goblet squat side, because like for me on my powerlift, you know, I powerlift myself, and depth's a big thing, right? You got to get depth on your squat. And a part of my auxiliary lifts is a goblet squat, a heavy goblet squat. And I do it for a little bit of volume. But what I found with it is it's a full body, because I have to be able to hold that statically with my upper back, statically with my biceps and triceps. So I'm getting some arm work in there. And then two, everything, as far as you say with hip mobility, I've never had any problems with hip mobility, anything at all, because I simply think a lot of it has to do with doing, and I do them twice a week, those goblet squats.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And you know, we're in the craze of hip mobility, right? And so it has to be a part of a program, man. Like, you know, problems in your hip cause lower back issues. They can cause knee stability issues. You know, like, you know, the Squat University, Aaron, that guy is the 100% a genius, right?
Yeah.
And so he, you know, I watch a lot of his mobility stuff, and I, you know, I'm 100% am starting to understand, like, you know, my left knee's been kind of bothering me a bit, but it's the same leg that I had my Achilles repaired on. So I've been having to focus a lot more on ankle mobility and hip mobility, because the issue is not my knee. The issue is my ankle stiff, and so is my hip. So it's just, it's funny how stuff works, man. It comes full circle. But again, you know, it kind of all rolls back to, like, how big is your ego? Do you feel like you can learn from somebody? And like, how, like, everyone has something to offer, right?
Yeah.
Like I learned stuff from my interns. Like, yeah. I learned stuff from my assistants. I'm not going to hire someone that I feel like I can't learn something from.
Exactly.
And like, you know, it's just our duty to be able to do that. So, man, I mean, just humbling yourself and learning more about the field is the really the greatest way to grow as a coach. Like, I'm telling you, that goblet squat is, you know, people are like, oh, you know, I want to do those goblet squats. But what do goblet squats progress up to? Zercher's, right? So, I mean, you just have to learn that everything, like, if you have to regress a kid, you have to regress a kid.
Exactly.
You know? You know, I've had to do that numerous times in the middle of workout. Says, hey, you put that down, you come right over here, you get this PVC pipe, we're going to work on your hinge. And we had a kid that literally couldn't hinge to save his life when he first got to Grambling. And when we left, man, he was RDL in 315. So, you know, it's just kind of like, once they get it, like, you know, like I know, and every other strength coach in America should know, that most of the time your gains of strength comes from, you know, increasing your coordination with your muscles, and also different nerve firing to create that coordination. So what are we, like, why, like, again, stimulating different things and using something as a different stimulus can literally change a kid's life athletically.
100% agree. Can we kind of go back a little bit? One of the things I know we want to talk about was the off-season training. You were talking a little about what you do with Grambling. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, your philosophy behind the off-season training, you know, preparing the athletes for that in-season training? Because obviously you said earlier too as well, we can get stronger in-season too.
So off-season, like I said, we use linear. I'm 100% believe in linear periodization. Do I expect everyone to be robotic and get the same gains? Of course I don't, because everyone's different.
Right.
Everyone's not sleeping the same. Everybody's not eating the same. Everybody's not hydrated the same. Yeah. Those are some of the things you have to add into the equation when you're coaching college athletes, right? Also, man, like they party, they stress about their relationship situations. A lot of kids now have so much stuff going on back home that, you know, you have to be 100% conscious and aware of that stuff. Off season, I'm going to always start with a GPP period. My GPP period is dynamic, right? So it may be 2 weeks, it may be 4 weeks.
Right.
It just depends on my guys. If I know for a fact that I sent home, you know, winter stuff to be doing, like to try to stay, and so I won't have to deal with GPP, great, I'm going to do that. I would 100% love for that to be the case. But let's be real. A third of your kids are going to do what they're supposed to do. A third of the kids are going to play around with what they're supposed to do. And a third of the kids ain't going to do a thing, right? Yep. So if they're not going to do a thing, you have to see, like, well, maybe one season, it may be two-thirds of the guys that do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Or it may be two-thirds of guys that don't do a thing. So it has to be dynamic. If I come in the first week, I see guys, like, we'll start off Like, I'm 100% two sets of 10, maybe 50%, maybe even 45% tempo, 3 seconds down. I put them on that metronome, so it's no plan. If I see you going too fast, hey, rack it, take a little break, start over.
Yep.
Like, you're gonna get those reps. And if they're extremely sore after the first week, that tells me everything I need to know is going to have to be a 4-week block. If they're like, oh, coach, this was easy, like, I'm feeling great. Okay, so we can only 2-week GPP this time, which I would most definitely prefer. And then I'm going to test them. I'm going to see where we are. I love to work off percentages. Once we go there, depending on training age, I'm going to have some guys start off at 75% for 5 sets of 5. Off season, because I can volume them up. I can put them in the grease at that point. And from there, I'll go 75, I'll go 77 and a half, and then I'll go 80, and I pull off of them, and I'll try to work up, you know, if they have a high training age, like juniors and seniors, I can get them to singles at, you know, 95%, you know, with a little buffer on it so they can have some left in the tank, because I don't want them to 100% burn out every rep. Central nervous system wise is going to depress it. And now I'm not going to be getting the benefits that I need to be getting from this training. So that's how I'm going to have them in the weight room. Like, we're going to have that maximum strength. I'm going to always train strength, like even in season, you know, I'm going to have a day of strength and a day of power.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't train strength, you're going to lose it. And therefore you're going to decrease in power. Yep. So that's my thought process in it. You know, I'm going to prepare them for spring ball. I prefer, like, spring balls being played earlier and earlier around the country.
Yep.
And so, of course, a good strength coach is going to have to factor that in. So, you know, when we go to spring ball, maybe 2 days a week. And again, like, by that time, I want to be in a strength power phase anyway. So working on rate of force development and things like that. So, mat drills, you know, we had a discussion about this and with a couple of my friends that are really good strength coaches, like the mat drills build the camaraderie. Yes, and that's great. I don't like them, because the thing is just like, you got guys coming from partying 2K and from New Year's immediately in to mat drills, and like, I don't think they're 100% prepped for that in the GPP phase. No. Now, in a maximum strength phase, by then I should have them, you know, prepared and ready to go. So then I can throw some mat drills on them. And I'm not going to be crazy as far as just like what we're going to do on circle run. Like, I can tell you right now, off the top of my head, what I would do the first couple of mat sessions. It'll be a circle run. It's going to be sled pushes to kind of reinforce my acceleration days that I'm spending with them. And it's not going to be ridiculous, but it's going to be a little moderate load. I'm going to do a broad jump, simple, and maybe do some hurdles. Maybe let me jumping over the hurdles, not even high level hurdles, low hurdles. We're going to do 5-10-5, change of direction, something simple. You know, the coaches love the, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yep.
And, you know, they love that. So, you know, you gotta appease the coaches.
Gotta appease them.
And, you know, you put that in and boom, like, you got your mat drills. Like, people try to do the most complicated stuff during mat drills, and you don't have to do that, right?
No.
So, and then as, you know, as the season, as it progresses closer to the season, you know, I'm going to take my time, like, and progress guys up plyometrically. I'm going to progress them acceleration wise. I'm going to address them. I'm going to progress them from change of direction to agility. You know, like, agility is nothing but change of direction with a stimulus. So I'm going to give them a stimulus. And as we get closer to the season, I'm going to start having them doing football specific movements, right? And football-specific conditioning. Now, my conditioning, I learned from Lyle Henley. Lyle's the head strength coach at UAB. Possibly one of the top strength coaches on the planet. This guy's a mad scientist. And like he's always progressing exercises from the previous year. Biggest thing I learned from him is you progress your athletes year by year. So therefore now he did something the other day where the guys dropped off boxes and then absorb the force and then go into a triple jump.
Yeah, okay.
So, I like that. You know, but that does not happen if I don't spend time absorbing force. If I don't spend time on a triple jump, you know, I won't be able to combine those two things to progress it, right? So that's the biggest thing as far as like a program with me is that, again, I've learned from Lyle, I've learned from Cochran, I've learned from Terry Jones, who is, by the way, you know, he was Cochran's assistant. He's been in Alabama for 34 years. The GOAT to me, he is the GOAT of strength and conditioning. He has so many championship rings. This guy's been around Alabama football. Bear Bryant recruited him. He was one of the first black players recruited. And it's unreal. Like this guy, I mean, look, I don't mean to be all emotional, but TJ is like a father to me. And he's like the father I didn't have. So, like, you know, I can call him and get advice about anything. And he's going to always give me the right advice. And, you know, I laugh with his son because his son is Lyle's assistant at UAB, Jason. And I was like, man, how's our dad doing? And like, he always laughs, but man, like this guy's like, he's absolutely amazing and has been instrumental in me getting my first job. And then pretty much every job I've gotten since then, like he's kind of put his finger in there and helped me out. But that's what I've done is that been at those programs and learned how to do it. Because as a young strength coach, you know, I'm thinking about the end goal is we want guys to be powerful, right? We want to be able to work fast. And I'm just thinking, okay, I want to go into a power phase. And TJ said, Kier, don't you understand that you cannot have power without strength? And I'm sitting there as a young strength coach, you know, I'm green. I just passed my CSCS. You know, I got my chest puffed out. I think I know everything. And guess what? No, I did not. It wasn't even so learn that. It just, you know, it's something that I do as well. Like I took from Lyle, like if I'm going to do this year, next year, I need to have a progression from that in order to continue to help these guys get more explosive. So, man, like that's what the offseason looks like. The summer for me is, like I said, conditioning wise, we're going to run 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Right.
I don't believe in hundreds. Because very rarely do we run 110 yards on the field. Now, that does not mean that one day I won't throw that in there. My athletes from Grambling will tell you, man, I had I told her, I was like, hey, man, we're going to run 40s, 50s, and 60s, but it's going to be on the count.
Yeah.
Jump off sides is going to turn to 60s, 70s, and 80s. If you jump again, it's going to turn to 110s. So, My assistant laughed. He was like, if you want to run 110, you should just say that.
Exactly.
So we end up running 110s, and you start to figure out, you know, what guys really have. And it's kind of a moniker for me, excuse me, to see where we are conditioning-wise.
Yeah.
I'll throw it in there one day halfway through to kind of see where you are. The guys, man, they initially did not respond very well mentally. Because now you're like, man, I got to run 110 yards.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But, you know, a third of the way through, they're like, wait a minute, I'm not breathing heavy. I'm actually in pretty good shape. From there, once I see where they are, as we get closer to camp, I'll cut that volume to 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I'll cut the time down, of course, to keep the intensity up. And, you know, work the rest ratio. We're going to work 1-5. I'm going to decrease it to 1-4. Usually try to keep it at 1-4, but some days I might get a little funky with them and throw a 1-3 in there or 1-2.
Right.
But I'm going to put the timing down. And once I did that, at the end, I always run 10-yard sprints because the game of football happens usually 4 to 6 seconds, you know, a play. So I'm going to see what you got left in the tank and running those 10s.
Exactly.
And by the time we get, and that's, like I said, stuff I learned from Lyle. And, like, eventually, man, we get to the season, they've been exposed to change of direction, plyometrics, agility, hamstring strengthening, complete total body work, upper body work, lower body work, hamstring work, posterior chain work, barbell hip thrust. They've been exposed to all that. They've been exposed to high speed sprinting. They've been exposed to short distance sprinting.
Yep.
They've been exposed to change of direction, shuffling. They've been like acceleration, deceleration work. We put everything in that pot. We've made the greatest pot of gumbo ever. And now, you know, it's time for the coaches and the fans to be able to see what we've been doing in the offseason. So, yeah, that's always been my training philosophy. We're going to get after it. But first things first, I got to see who I'm training, what their abilities are, because some guys may be able to bound.
Right, some can't.
And that's the great part about having a competent assistant is that, hey, okay, we're going to try this bounding exercise. We're going to go two at a time, and then we're going to separate you off into two groups. These guys over here that can't bound, we're going to power skip.
Right.
And we're going to work up to bounding. These guys down here are going to bound, and each week we're going to adjust the distance of the bound. And that's how you become effective, but also, you know, see who can do what. Because it's so crazy, man, when Jerry Jeudy was at Alabama, man, he couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. So uncoordinated. It was crazy because his glutes were not turning on, right?
Right.
So TJ had him doing basic band walk stuff. And this is where I learned that at Alabama that it don't matter how great an athlete is, if he has deficiencies, you must address those regardless of how exciting or how good an athlete that kid is.
Heck yeah, for sure.
So this kid's like butt wasn't turning on, like he wasn't a great squatter, had, you know, valgus when he squatted. And this kid, first round draft pick, played with them Broncos.
Yeah.
Probably makes more money a year than I'm making in 10. And, you know, like, it's crazy, man. Like, it's really crazy to watch the athletic development of these kids. So
it's awesome.
And, you know, it's always a great testament to, you know, we're the behind the scenes guys, but we are the most important guys. I wish they would pay us like we were the most important guys.
That is true. I really wish that was the case because, you know, I have conversations with people like yourself and so many other people, and it's like, man, there are so many things that you're doing behind the scenes, and it's, you start averaging up the dollar per hour, and you're like, oh, man, it's a lot.
Not only that, like, not just the stuff we do work-wise as far as just the physical, the toughness, quote unquote, don't even start from that. But man, like psychologically,
yes, 100%.
Stuff that, man, like I don't tell, you know, I strict confidence when it comes to my athletes, but man, like some of the problems I've heard, some of the things that athletes have come to talk to me about, like depression, suicide, like drug problems. And you hear that, you can hug them and cry with them. But then from there, like you help them figure stuff out. Like one of my athletes messaged me the other day, you know, and it brought tears to my eyes. It was just like, man, like you have been like instrumental in my growth as a woman. Like, you know, she was struggling with alcohol. And now, you know, she's been sober for 2 years now.
Awesome. And it's
probably one of the greatest things, like, yeah, great. Okay, we've had guys put 75, 80 pounds on their bench press. That's in the summer. Great. Fantastic, right? But that's the stuff that I remember the most is like, how did I affect the lives of these kids? Because my son battled depression when he went away for college for his first year. He played at an SEC school, I'd rather not say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But played at SEC school. A lot of days my son can pull himself out of bed. No one knew it because my son was a, you know, when he got there, you know, 24 in ACT. I'm sorry, I made, yeah, 24 in ACT, good 3.6 GPA, you know, great kid, comes from a decent home. And, you know, he gets there, man, and, you know, nobody knows what's going on. And my kid ends up, you know, failing out his first semester, you know, didn't do well his second semester, not a part of the team, which kind of further exacerbated his depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, he comes back home and, you know, he fights it, you know, for about a year or two, scared to tell me. He's like, "Dad, you did so much to get me where I was. And, you know, I feel like I let you down." I'm just like, "Son, like, you know, to hell with football. Like, I'm your dad. Like, I don't really care about if you're playing football or not. I care about if you're okay as a human." So my son ends up, you know, going to McDonald's, working as a manager. And, you know, I was like, "You got to find your why again. That's not, oh, I can't help you do that. You have to do it." And so he came home one day and he said, "French fries." I said, "What?" He said, "I never want to smell French fries again in my life." And, you know, he went, I got him, you know, got him back in school with me. Like, I got to coach my son as a strength and conditioning coach.
Wow.
College. And he ends up his first year starting, having 14 sacks. He is now working with one of like my very good friend, Irvin McKenzie, is now the head strength coach at Allen. And I don't know if you had an opportunity. I try to retweet the stuff he does, but we didn't have all the resources that we had at a UAB because we worked together at UAB or that I had at Alabama. Like, he has chairs, a couple of boxes, cones, and man, some of this stuff, change of direction stuff, acceleration stuff that he's doing at Allen, I don't know if they're going to be able to hold on to him any a lot longer because it's exceptional. So, you know, and carries now, you know, he got to Allen, he was maybe 6'6", maybe 220, 225, and now he's 6'6", 250.
Wow.
And not only that, like, he runs sub 4.5 in the 40. He runs sprints with the receivers. So, hopefully, this is his senior year, man. We'll see what shapes for him. But, you know, those type of stories make me, like, I made a promise that I would never watch anyone's kid go through that.
Yeah.
Because my son felt like he didn't really have anyone to talk to. And I want to be that guy. Like, you know, to hear my athletes, even, you know, after we let go at Grambling, say, you know, "Coach, I love you." Like, all across the sports. Like, that just really means that, you know, I did what I set out to do, which is affect young people's lives. So, it's always the greatest part of the profession.
Heck yeah. These are going to be mothers and fathers and people in the workforce, people you care about, right? And it all starts with just asking them a question and getting to know them and build a relationship, right? They're not just a robot in there. That's a human being. That's what I found to be most beneficial, you know? So I came from a small town in Missouri, and it was really tough the first time I had to talk with a young man who was from the inner city and of a different race than me. Like, that for me was really, really tough, but I had to understand, like, what he's coming from, kind of thing. Like, for me, that's huge as a coach to try and figure out, where are these kids coming from? What's their background?
And not come across as judgmental, you know?
Exactly. Like, I care about you. Yeah. I want to see you succeed.
It's the biggest thing, man. It's like, you know, I think that many times so many coaches hire guys based on the logo than based upon, like, experiences, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, when you have athletes that are from the inner city, of course, they're already not going to be comfortable, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's a collegiate setting, it's a lot of different attitudes, egos, and things being molded onto this football team.
Yep.
And the biggest thing is that you celebrate their successes, but also you don't treat each athlete, you don't let certain guys, like, yeah, I hold everybody accountable. You have to be true to who you are as a coach. And guys respect that. Like, they see right through that fake energy, rah-rah stuff.
Yep.
I can't begin to tell you how many guys would pull me to the side, even as an intern, and just be like, man, why is he doing all that? Like, he doesn't really mean it. Yeah. He's not really like this guy, like, outside of here. So,
right.
Like, you know, it's kind of like that thing in itself can cause a distinction among your athletes. Yeah. Like, just be who you are, man. Like, if you are a high energy guy, great, be a high energy guy. But understand, man, like, the minute that they see you not that same guy, they're going to be like, man, I can't trust him.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing. Got to have that trust.
I don't trust him. So, you know, that was always the big thing. You know, every athlete's not going to be your best friend. Some athletes are just going to take to you a little bit more than others. That still doesn't mean you don't need to make an attempt to build a relationship with this kid. Hey, what you got going on? The most, probably one of the greatest phrases as a coach that I've come across is, hey, are you straight? You okay?
Yeah.
And, man, like, a lot of these kids, man, like, no one asked them that, right? Like, and this is no offense to football coaches, but a lot of the times they're so enamored with the X's and the O's that they forget to ask some of these kids, like, are they okay? Like, a lot of coaches are checking, are you going to class? Are you doing your schoolwork or checking your grades? Not because they care, but it's because it's a part of their job description.
Well, they're getting barked at all. The kids are getting barked at all day. When was the first, you know, all they're getting at is like, why are you not here? Why are you not doing this? Why are you not doing that? And then they come in the weight room and you're all up in their ass the entire time for the 60 minutes. Like, I mean, why would they want to listen to you? Why would they even want to, you don't act like you care.
I can't jump a kid's ass if his mom's at home, don't know how she's going to keep her lights on. And this kid's in my weight room.
Yep.
Struggling or misses class because he's trying to work a little side job or Uber Eat or Uber to try to help his mom with the bills back home.
Exactly.
Like, it's a and I had a kid going through that, man, and it was probably like, man, I had tears in my eyes in the office listening to this kid, like, man, like, I gotta help my mom. Like, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. So, yeah, coach might not have knew it, but during his weight room time, I let him go in and try to take care of that business. And I would stay an hour later for the kid to come in and take care of his stuff. And, man, like, you know, when I ended up leaving, you know, grumbling, like, this kid came and hugged me, man. And, like, he cried for probably about 5 minutes. I was just like, you just don't understand how something just as simple as letting me come in to work out at a different time was able to help my mom and, you know, trying to change her trajectory in my family's life. Like, dude, like, it's just so much of that goes on. Like you said, all you want to do is jump my ass, but when was the last time you asked me, was I okay?
Exactly.
One of the coaches from Grambling, his name's Quinn Burrell, man, wide receivers coach, players coach, really good guy. We went to a retreat, man, and during his presentation, he said a player – one time told him, before you check me, check on me. And
I love that.
Man, dude, like, it was probably, I've kept that in the back of my mind so much, man, because before you jump a kid, you can tell by their body language if something's not right. If you're a good coach and you're paying attention to your athletes. Like, some guys are going to come in high energy every day. Some kids are kind of laid back. You know, some kids are kind of, they shy away from all that. They just want to do the work. But when you have kids that a high energy guy that comes in one day and he's just like not himself, like, sometimes pulling that kid in the office, asking them what's going on and providing advice for that kid, you know, and then them not ever hearing about it again, or you talking to other athletes about it, man, builds so much trust with them kids, man. And like, when the kids know you love them and they can trust you, and you have their best interest in heart, and you'll go to bat even with the head coach for them.
Exactly.
Like, they're like, hey, man, like, I love this dude. Like, and so it makes it easier in the long run. It makes it easier to discipline those guys because they know it's not coming from a place where I don't like you. I don't deal with you, right? It's coming from a place where, hey, man, like, these are the consequences for your actions. You know what, coach? Like, I got it. I'm going to handle it, you know? And afterwards, like, every time, any time that I've had to discipline a kid, like, afterwards, I always love them up.
Yeah. Afterwards,
I'm always like, it was a kid, man, at Grambling. My first got there, man, when I tell you, I used to bust this kid's ass, man, because he just could not get right.
Yeah.
But after every time afterwards, I would just tell him, hey, man, like, you got all the potential in the world to be a fantastic athlete, a great man. And I was just like, I can tell that something's not right. And then eventually he came in my office and, man, poured everything out. Yeah. And then, dude, like, he made some big plays for us this year. And, man, I love that kid because he, you know, he overcame his own demons and adversity. And, you know, so, you know, when he did later on, you know, when I did have to get him maybe one or two more times, you know, he was like, coach, I got it because I know what I did. Ain't no excuses for it.
Exactly. And that,
you know, so people don't understand, like, you know, a lot of people always talk about, you know, they read Brett's book, you know, Conscious Coaching, and think they can identify athletes. Oh, he's this type of athlete. Like, no, man, like that book is outstanding book. Now, don't get me wrong, because it does put players in the archetype to help you understand how to coach them better.
Yeah.
But I would say just don't use that book to label kids. More so use it as a way to communicate with them.
I think that's bad when you kind of put a label on things. That's where that's when things get a little bit squirrely, in my opinion, because it's like you're putting somebody in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not getting to see the full realm of everything. But you know, Coach Thompson, as we kind of wind down here, kind of want to get you out of here on our last question. What are you grateful for?
Oh man, I am grateful for the journey, for peace, and for health. Man, like right now, Coach, you know, we talked about earlier, man, like, it's just a blessing to be able to wake up now with so many things going around. I've seen a couple of my friends pass away over the past couple of years, and it's just been, you know, it kind of puts stuff into perspective, kind of helps you be grateful for the little things. I'm grateful for my job. I'm grateful for my family. Like, my family is my 100% why I do everything. Like, you know, when you have, you know, kids,
yep,
they make you look at life so much differently, because, you know, now you have things and you have a family, and like, it makes you see that everything I do is for them. So I have to make sure what I'm doing matches what I want to provide for them.
Exactly.
So I now, you know, I'm working for Fan Control Sports, and dude, like, man, let me tell you, like, this company, the culture is set. Like, everyone's working their butt off and everyone has a good time doing it. And so I'm so grateful for that type of environment. I'm grateful for healthy children, healthy family members, great relationships. And like I said, the journey, man, like, I wish that I, you know, would have found out about strength and conditioning earlier. I changed careers at 32, man. And so for me to be 40 and, you know, hey, like, I'm on my third job as a head guy, you know, it didn't start easy. Like, you know, I had, you know, a couple of guys tell me, you know, hey, like, you sent off red flags because you changed careers at 32. And I did time. I didn't have a master's degree. And now, you know, here I am working on my PhD. And, you know, sometimes you need that push in the back to say, hey, man, like, you know, if this is really what you want to do, like, you got to go all in. So,
yep.
And just the journey of volunteering, learning how to, you know, what to do, what not to do, making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, snack bags. Like, you just, a lot of times you wonder why you're going through certain things. And then
yeah.
When you get to this place, you look back and you say, that's why I had to do that.
Nothing happens by accident.
Nothing does. And so, man, I'm just grateful, man, and just thankful for, you know, just having the opportunity to be someone's dad, someone's coach, someone's mentor, someone's friend. Like, I don't take any of that for granted. And the older I get, the more I just realize how important peace is and happiness. And, you know, once you find it, like, you know, you don't like to let anything disturb that balance. So, last thing, just to not be as silly, just be a little silly, man. I'm thankful that God created crappie fishing. Because without crappie fishing, I don't know if I would have an escape from coaching in life. So it's March the 4th. And by about a week, the crappie are really going to be biting. And I'm going to get to see that minnow on the hook with a bobber and see it go under the water. It's probably going to bite my first fish. I'm definitely going to post them. But I don't care how big he is. I cannot wait to get out there on that water. So I'm extremely grateful for fishing. Specifically crappie fishing.
I can't wait to see you post that up, Coach. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, man, I cannot wait.
Well, Coach, again, I cannot thank you enough for being a guest of the podcast. You want to plug your social media real quick as well if people want to follow you?
Absolutely, man. So I just got verified on Twitter. Oh,
let's go.
My Twitter is Coach K. CSCS is like the certification. Twitter. My Instagram is Maximus the Trainer. Maximus is my favorite like fictional character from Gladiator.
Yeah.
Like that's my guy. Yeah. Maximus the Trainer. I don't really do much Snapchat, and I think my TikTok's the same. It's one of the two, but I'm not, you know, real big on TikTok, but I said I was going to start posting more like training videos and just kind of starting to use that to kind of, you know, transfer to Twitter for video stuff. But man, our season's coming up. I definitely want to plug our league, Fan Control Football. It's very unique. Fans call the plays. The first 3 weeks we have what we call a draft on Wednesday nights. And those guys like that are drafted the first 3 weeks, you can play on three, you know, on different teams each week.
Wow.
Until the fourth week. And then we'll have from there, you'll be kind of the rosters are set. So we expanded from four teams to eight teams for this spring. Drewski just is one of the owners of the teams now. Steve Aoki has a team.
Wow.
It's just really neat, man. Runday Tiki Barber. It's just really a dope experience. We just built the stadium in Pullman Yards in Atlanta, where like the business model's great, the owner's great. Anytime you can sit down to dinner next to the CEO of the company and talk about what you do and they, you know, appreciate it, it's always going to be a great thing to do. So, man, check us out. It starts in April. We're on Twitch. We just got to deal with NBC. So it'll be like, it's definitely legit. Like major corporate sponsors, Tyson, Verizon, like you name it, man. Like we're trying to do it. It's not just some gimmicky football league.
Yeah.
We have former NFL guys, former CFL guys, very good collegiate athletes, and just some diamonds in the rough that we found during tryouts. So watch it. There's no kickers. There's no when you want to go for extra point, it's one-on-one DBY receiver. So it's extremely unique 50-yard field. It's seven-man football. So you got three down linemen, you know, super back, tight end, wide receivers. So it's a great experience that you guys will enjoy. So check it out if you get the chance to.
I know I'll be tuning in and everybody else should be tuning in to that. That sounds freaking awesome, man. So Coach Thompson, again, thank you so much for being on the podcast this week. And again, thank you so much.
No problem, man.
Absolutely. Well, hey everybody, make sure you reach out to Coach Thompson, follow him in the Fan Control Football League, see what they got going on there, and everybody stay strong.